Hello, hello.
Hey,
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I don't know why, but it feels like it's been like forever since we
It
last
really
spoke.
does. Yeah.
Time is flying in final season, and
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
But you know what doesn't fly? True crime.
It
Was the worst segue I've ever done in my entire life.
was beautiful.
Anyway, without further ado, let's talk about some true crime. I'm Sonia,
I'm Maddie.
and welcome to Grimm. So, without my horrible segue, I wanted to do the story of Mary Ann Britland today. Have you heard of her?
I have not.
Yeah, I feel like she's quite a small one. I didn't really know anything about this case either, but basically, she was born in 1847. So kind of, I feel like, the more far removed, the easier things are to talk about. And so she was born in 1847. And she was born in Bolton, which is in Lancashire. And I feel like I'm saying that wrong, but you know what? We're just gonna go with it. Her parents were called Joseph and Hannah Haig. That's Haguee. And again, I feel like I'm saying that wrong, but you know what? It is what it is. It's
Wait,
good.
where is Lancashire?
It's in the UK,
Oh, okay.
like
It's
in
like a
England.
town.
Yeah.
Okay.
And right, sorry, she was the second eldest daughter, so like had an older sister. And I guess apparently that's the same thing as like being a middle child, I think is the way that is the way that one of the articles kind of described it. And then I did a little bit of an aside here, because apparently I did, you know when you're on Wikipedia and you just like click a bunch of things and then like suddenly you're on a page for like, I don't know, like knitting or something. Yeah, that was me. Except I looked at, like the personalities that are sometimes associated with your birth order. And so apparently a lot of the experts who study personality believe that the birth order does in fact play a pretty big role in development. And middle child syndrome is kind of this like the idea that because you're not the oldest and you're not the youngest, you get less. Like, like no, like attention from your parents, like other resources, you're kind of like caught in the middle. So the result of that is this tendency for certain personality traits to shine through that are different from the older and younger siblings, even though you're growing up in the same household. And that includes things as, being like not as family oriented as their siblings. Like they may have somewhat of a stronger sense of like not belonging than their siblings do, and that can be a little bit difficult, working in groups and working with others. So that's one of the character traits of a middle child. Also feeling overshadowed, like believing that their parents don't care about them, looking back as adults, a lot of middle children have like a negative view of childhood, which is really sad, I think. And like going off of that, a lot of the times middle children are the first ones to move out of the house, which you'd kind of expect with like the birth order that like the oldest sibling would move out and then the middle and then the youngest, but I guess the middle children have a tendency to move out first. And apparently, they're also more likely to move the furthest away. And that, according to psychologists, stems from a feeling about being misunderstood by their families. So, all not good things. And there are, of course, positive traits for being a middle child, but I have omitted them here because I feel like the positive ones don't really go on track with someone becoming a killer. Yeah. So, but despite all of that, so she ended up marrying a man called Thomas Britland, and they had their wedding in a church in Ashton-under-Lyne in 1866. So going quite far, like, in the past. And then they lived in this townhouse that they rented on Turner Lane. And a few years after they got married, they had two daughters, Elizabeth Hannah and Susanna. I love the rhyming names.
Yeah.
I think that that's so fun.
It is cute.
Yeah. I'm a sucker for, like, rhyming names or, like, themed names.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, names that start with the same letter. I just feel like it's so fun when there's, like, a cohesive, like, thing.
Yeah.
Apparently, she also had two jobs to make ends meet. So during the day, she worked as a factory worker, and then by night, she was a barmaid. And, I mean, I guess they didn't really, like, they weren't super, super well off, but, you know, he had some work as well, and they were making things work. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, this is, like, 1886, so, like, I feel like you don't need as much money to survive on.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she did have two jobs. And everything was fine, I guess. There's nothing that, like, has come up after she got married. You know, there were 20 years or so of things being just okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then something changed in February of 1886. So just about two decades after they got married. On this day, she ended up going to a chemist nearby, and she told them that basically she had mice in her home. And I feel like that is pretty valid for, like, the 1800s, you know,
mm-hmm.
you'd get mice. So basically she told this chemist that she had mice and she needed to kill them. And the way that you would kill them back in the day was buying this thing called Harrison's Vermin Killer. Which, fun name.
I'm sensing a poisoning.
You are very smart.
As an empath, I could just tell.
Yes. So, she bought these packets of Harrison's Vermin Killer. And this is really smart, actually. She had to sign a poison register because the Vermin Killer had arsenic and something called strychnine in it.
Hmm. What year was this again?
1886.
Oh, that's a little more forward than I thought
the 1800s
were. But yeah, good for them.
Like, we should have people sign a poison register here too.
Yeah,
you buy some, like, pesticides or, like, rodent killers.
Yeah, like, yeah, rat poison.
Yeah, that's, like, yeah, dangerous for human consumption. Like,
yeah,
bad. But yeah, so she signed this poison register because it had these two highly, highly toxic chemicals in it. And I mean, we did talk about arsenic really recently.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to go over that again. But apparently, strychnine is also a highly toxic and a colorless alkaloid. And it's apparently said to taste kind of bitter. So when it's swallowed, or it can also be like, absorbed through the skin, so it doesn't have to be swallowed. If you're, like, holding it for a long period of time, it can just, like, leak into your bloodstream from your skin.
That's scary.
Yeah. I hate that.
Yeah.
Like, you think that you can hold something and it'll be fine, but suddenly, bam,
yeah,
it's in your body. But when it's swallowed or absorbed, it causes convulsions of the muscles, and basically the reason it leads to death is asphyxiation.
Mm-hmm.
The muscles just spasm so much that you can't breathe.
Yikes.
And that's really scary. Yeah,
I
don't, like, suffocating is a, like, genuinely one of the biggest fears that I have.
Yeah.
So, no bueno. Basically, it does that because it's a neurotoxin, so it affects motor nerve fibers in the spinal cord. And that's kind of, like, where it operates, like, where it targets.
Hmm.
Honestly, the mechanism of action is actually kind of interesting. But I feel like it's only really interesting if you're like a biologist or a chemist, so, or you know, like whatever along those lines. So I'm not gonna bore you with the details, but you know, it'll be linked in the description if anyone is interested. Also, something that I found really wild is that like they knew that this was a poison, right? But I think when you see something do what it does, somehow humans just have a tendency to be like, oh, maybe we can use that to our advantage. So basically, in really small doses, it was used as like a muscle strengthener to strengthen muscle contractions.
Interesting.
So like heart muscle and bowel muscle, people would take strychnine for it. Also, apparently, sometimes it was a performance enhancer somehow. I don't know how, but... Yeah. Like people would take small doses of it and it would be fine. Yeah, it must just be like, you know, larger doses are enough to kill someone, but it's been used as medicine, so it's kind of wild. And you were dead on when you said you're sensing a poisoning. Unfortunately, in March of 1886, so the same year that she said that she had vermin, she used the poison to kill her eldest daughter.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And she was 19 years old at the time. This is Elizabeth Hannah. It was really heartbreaking. Like, you think that the one person you can count on is your mother.
Yeah.
But she just poisoned her.
Do we know why?
Kind of. So, the doctor was called, and they did, like, kind of an autopsy, but this is poison that kind of causes, you know, your muscles to do things.
Mm-hmm.
So, ultimately, it was actually ruled natural causes. Like, the cause of death was due to vomiting and convulsions and spasms of the heart, but... no one really put anything together at the time. And it was kind of like, oh, like that must have just been a condition that she had or something that manifested at this time. And at that point, she claimed £10 on Elizabeth's life insurance policy.
Okay.
So I think that's, it's not enough. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, oh, like this is a massive amount. Like she's committing insurance fraud.
Yeah.
But like, it is one of the reasons that maybe she did it.
Wow.
One of them, and maybe. Awful. Yeah, it is. Not good. After that, just a few months later, like, not even a few months later, but she used the same poison on her husband, who is 44 years old at the time, Thomas Britland, on May 3rd of that same year, so just a few months later. And his death was... it was the same kind of a thing, you know, like the doctor saw the spasms and the vomiting, and they kind of just assumed that it would be epilepsy.
Okay.
And so that's kind of what they ruled it as. It was a natural death due to epilepsy. And she, again, claimed life insurance on him. And that was kind of like the big thing that like maybe she was trying to do, get some money.
Mm-hmm.
But then, here's where some other information comes out, right? Apparently, she'd been having an affair with her neighbor, Thomas Dixon. Yeah. And right after her own husband's death, she was invited to, I guess, like, stay almost at the Dixon's house, which was just across the street, by his 29-year-old wife, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
So Mary...
be as a wife, because
Mary was a lovely person who said, yep, we'll take you in, you can stay and you can be a part of the family.
Mary.
Yeah. And then just a few days later, on May 14th, Mary Dixon was Britland's third and final victim. And that's when people started to get suspicious, because this was another death that had near identical symptoms, and the only person in common with all of them was Marion Britland.
Yeah.
So the first thing that kind of raised suspicion was the identical symptoms that kind of caused people to be like, maybe we should look at this.
Yeah.
So she ended up being interviewed by the police in connection with Mary Dixon's death after the body was examined by a pathologist, and it was found to contain a lethal quality of both of the poisons. So then after this interview, she was arrested by the police. But she did end up confessing to them that she had wanted to be married to Thomas Dixon, which makes sense because that's the one that she had the affair with. And that she had first poisoned her daughter Elizabeth because Elizabeth had kind of found out or was kind of saying that she suspected these different intentions with her mother.
Dang.
So apparently in her eyes, her daughter just had to die.
Yikes.
Yeah, which is not the right course of action, I'm not gonna lie. And after that, she, I guess, realized that, you know, poison works to kill, which is not a big revelation. But she then killed her husband because he was holding her back, and then finally she killed Mary Dixon, who was also in her way. So they actually ended up arresting her and Thomas Dixon because it was Thomas Dixon's wife who had passed away, and it ended up being just that she was charged for all three murders, but Thomas Dixon was found to have played no part in the murder of his wife, so he was free to go. But somehow she almost pinned it on him as well. The trial was on July 22nd, 1886. So again, just like, this is happening in a very short period of time. And basically, that's when the defense came in and they said that there was no real motive. You know, like, yes, she took insurance money, but it really wasn't that much, and the payments were nothing in compensation for, you know, her husband and her daughter dying. So that was kind of their whole defense, is that, you know, why would she do it? And of course, you know, 1886, things, people just kind of went on other people's word. You know, there's no like CCTV footage to be like, oh, I saw him poison her. So the jury took a while to convict her. But during the trial, there was a statement from an eyewitness, and that said, "The case lasted 2 days. The evidence was overwhelming. The three deceased persons had been poisoned by strychnine. Mrs. Britland had purchased mouse powder in sufficient quantities to kill them all, and there was no evidence of any mice on whom it could have been legitimately used. The case of the poisoning of Mrs. Dixon was actually the one tried, but the deaths of the others were proven to show system and rebut the defense of the accident. Even if there had not been sufficient evidence to secure a conviction, Mrs. Britland had many indiscreet conversations about quote-unquote mouse powder and poisoning, and had been anxious to discover whether such poisoning could be traced to her death."
Yeah. Not looking good.
Not looking good at all. Like I said, the jury took a while to convict her, but eventually they found her guilty. And then she maintained till the end that she was innocent. She even stated, like, right after she was sentenced, she said, quote, "I am quite innocent. I am not guilty at all," end quote. But regardless, her execution was still scheduled for August 9th, 1886. And on the day, I think people report that she was in a state of, like a state of collapse, almost. And so on that date, on August 9th, she had to be assisted to the gallows by two of the wardens there. And she was kind of out of it, but also screaming and crying for mercy. But it didn't really matter. The jury had convicted her, and the people at the prison had their job to do. And on August 9th, 1886, she was the first woman to be executed by hanging at Strangeways Prison in Manchester.
Huh?
Yeah. So, I know that wasn't the most fun story in the world, but that is what I have for you this week.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, of course, no worries. Do you have any questions, comments, or concerns? Any thoughts about that story?
I don't think so.
That's fair enough.
Coming up with questions, comments.
Maybe I should send you the stories in advance, and then you can come up with questions and I can answer them.
Yeah.
When you're doing a group presentation and you have to present something and you need people to ask you questions, so you give pre-made questions to the audience. It could be like that.
Yeah. Perfect.
Amazing. But, yeah. I do feel bad for her.
Yeah.
Obviously, we don't know the whole story because this was the 1800s, and I feel like there's more, and I feel like I'd like to know her side of it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what we know. It's all I've got going to tell you. And if you don't have any thoughts, do you feel like changing the subject, giving us a little life update?
Sure, yeah. I made 4 whole phone calls today, which was crazy.
Oh my god, that is insane. So many.
Yeah, I felt very adult.
Fuck yeah.
And that's most of the exciting stuff happening for me.
That was pretty solid.
Thank you.
It's a good update.
Thank you.
I wish I had anything that fun. I've just been working. It's been really sad. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Pain.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of it for me.
Yeah.
Just doing work, sadly.
Is it finals for you now? Is it the month of finals that you guys have?
Yeah, it is. I've got so many things to wrap up and stuff. So
yeah,
lots of work.
Yeah.
But do you have anything else that you would like to share?
I do not.
Nice. Do you want to spiel us out then?
Yeah. So you can find us on Instagram at Grimm Podcast. You can like our photos, DM us, follow us, and from our profile, there's a button to email us. You can email us at thegrimmpodcast@gmail.com. You can send us thoughts on stories we have covered, stories you want us to cover, or life updates of your own. We also have a Twitter, which is Podcast Grimm, and a Facebook, which is Grimm Podcast. And other than that, just leave us a good review and tell your friends and family about us.
Yeah, and we will see you guys next week for some paranormal, which I think will be really exciting.
Yeah.
But yeah, until then, stay safe out there, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Bye.